So it's ZGB Radio on this beautiful looking Monday morning inside the 11th day of January 2016. Let me say a very pleasant morning to John Ottaway. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Okay, I'm not finding you. Let me see if I can grab a mic and see if I can find you. Can you go again?
Good morning.
Ah, I've got you now. Yes, you're here. Well, welcome to Montserrat. Welcome to ZGB Radio and welcome to Montserrat.
Thank you for a wonderful welcome.
Indeed, indeed. Now, tell us a little bit about John Ottaway.
I had a hit record in the UK back in 1977, and I became a sort of a star overnight. And then I had a long period of 25 years before I had another hit in 2002, and basically managed to sort of like make a career out of it, and I had good live audience, and I'm here.
And you're in Montserrat. We'll get back to the Montserrat part and why you're here in just a moment. But I just want the folks out there who are listening, and I do know that we got lots of folks right now listening, to get a little taste of you. You did something called House of the Rising Sun.
Yes, we recorded it at Abbey Road Studios, and I'd noticed whenever I sang House of the Rising Sun, people would heckle. So we booked Abbey Road Studios and invited any of the fans that wanted to come to the recording session. And 1,000 fans turned up to Abbey Road Studios to heckle on the B-side of Bunsen Burner.
Let's take a listen.
Well, it's been the ruin of many a poor boy. Ah, well, God, I know. I'm one. Another. She was a tailor. She sewed my blue jeans. Yes, no, my father. He was a gambling man. In Orleans. Now, the only thing that a gambler needs is a suitcase and a trunk. Two things. And the only time he ever feels satisfied is when he's all a drunk. Children, not the day you have to spend your lives in sin and misery in the house of the rising sun.
So it's John that you're here in House of the Rising Sun. Now, John, tell us, how did you get introduced to Montserrat?
Basically, I hadn't written any new songs for years and years and years. And I hadn't been a new album for about 15 years. And I think the reason for that was lack of demand. We got to a point, really, when it was about time we did a new album. I was just thinking, okay, it's a new album phase. Where would we record it? And I was just wondering where the most romantic, wonderful place to I could think of to record was, and the most romantic place to record. And I thought of Montserrat. And no international act had come over to Montserrat since the Rolling Stones in 1989. So I just thought, wouldn't it be a real good fun thing to do, to be, you know, the first act in all those years to sort of fly in with the band and record an album? And I asked a few people about coming over, and they said, just come over and see what it's like. You won't understand unless you actually come here and find out. So I'm here and I'm finding out, and it's wonderful.
Okay, and what do you think of the island itself?
It's wonderful. I have a joke. There's a lot of truth in the joke, is that everywhere else I've ever been, I've had to try and persuade people that I'm a rock star. I come here and I'm actually treated like one. Never happened anywhere else. It's wonderful.
What's your fan base like?
It's not huge, but it's very, very strong, and they've kept me going in a career that I've loved for, you know, since 1977. And in back in the UK, I do about 120 shows a year, so it's very live based, and they've been very good, my audience, in terms of following me around on any project or dream I have, be it, you know, fill the Albert Hall or have another hit record, or, you know, or have a movie and launch it in the Odeon Leicester Square and that sort of thing. So it's a small but, you know, very fanatical in the fan terms.
Mm-hmm. Now you've mentioned your fans, and you seem to really, you know, want to big up your fans. I know that you'll be back in September when you'll be doing your recording here in Montserrat. Do you plan on maybe getting some of the fans to come over to see what Montserrat is like?
Oh yeah, we're going to sort of basically say we're here doing the recording, and then invite any of them that want to make the journey over to maybe do hand claps or a bit of singing or something like that on the album to come over. And knowing what the fans are like, I reckon it'd be about 40 or 50 coming over.
Yeah. Tell us about some of the things that you've been doing since you've been here in Montserrat.
I had a look at the old Air Studios, went to have a look at that. I was very interested in the volcano and that side of things, to see what had happened. And everyone's been very helpful in terms of showing me and explaining to me what the physically looking at it and explaining what the situation is, and the positives and negatives of that side of things. So that's been very interesting. And also just going around, so some of the bars have a wonderful atmosphere, and so I've certainly enjoyed a few cold beers in some of the most lovely places. And I've been quite astonished by how green Montserrat is. I have been told it's not always this green. You do go through dry patches and it looks a bit brown, but certainly coming here at the moment, I mean, it is lush. And the sea's so blue, isn't it? I mean, in England, you look out at the sea and you certainly don't want to go in there. Here, it's completely enticing.
I think we're close to heaven. That's why you see that blue, you know? Means that heaven is just around the corner.
That's what it feels like, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to look at coming back in September, when you expect to bring a band, mm-hmm. and maybe some of your fans over to Why? I mean, there are so many places in the world that you could have gone and maybe do your next album. There must be something else that is pulling you towards Montserrat.
What it is, if you actually think, where are the most famous places in the world to record? There's that everybody's heard of. I mean, like, there's Sun Studios in America. There's Abbey Road Studios. Can only think of a couple more apart from Montserrat. And, you know, in terms of being a famous, iconic place to record, Montserrat is right at the top. Now, if you sort of say, right, those are the famous studios, which one would you most like to go to and record? It is, as you say, it's certainly the most beautiful. I mean, I've recorded at Abbey Road, and it's just a big building just down the street. Montserrat, a beautiful island in the middle of the Caribbean. So why am I coming? Because it's an iconic place to record, and it's beautiful.
Okay. Now, how do you plan on recording on Montserrat, though? I mean, the Ear Studios, which was the magical studio where so many great artists have recorded, you know, it's not here anymore. Are you going to set up a studio or something?
Yeah, these days, the lovely thing about, or one of the things about recording these days, and most people do it, is you can pretty much record in your bedroom if you want to. You don't need the huge amount of equipment that you used to use years ago. So you can actually, in a couple of flight cases, put a studio in and bring it over and find a venue to actually record in. Partly because of that sort of situation, because people record in their bedrooms and stuff like that and make perfectly adequate records, the old-fashioned idea of going somewhere to a residential studio and staying there for a period of time and recording has become old-fashioned. People don't do it anymore. But there is something really romantic about the idea of the band packing up their things and, you know, living in a residential place for a week and just recording music as a band. And I'd just like to recreate that romance, really. And the nice thing about it is that it should make us all quite a nice documentary, which can cover that whole idea of a band going away to record in somewhere iconic and catch all the sunlight, the wonderful scenery and everything. Because if we just recorded in London or something, that wouldn't look good on telly. But if you come somewhere like this, certainly would.
The fans, your fans seem to be involved in a lot of the things you do. I've been looking at your documentary and reading about you, and you seem to take your fans wherever you go. If you were to speak off the top of your head, how many fans do you think, you know, or how many people do you think you can get to really come to Montserrat if you were to really press it?
Well, the thing is, I don't think you can really press it that hard, largely because there's not that much hotel accommodation on the island. So, and it would be unfortunate to sort of like press and have loads of people wanting to come that couldn't. So I think what it's going to be is more just sort of say, that's where we're going. If you fancy it, come over, you know, without pressing it too hard. And I think if we do that, I think probably about 40 or 50 people will come over. We're doing it in September, which isn't the height of the tourist season here. So for those people, there should be villas that they can get into. The hotels aren't going to be packed. So it's a good time to do it. I gather it's the height of the hurricane season as well.
I was just about to ask you why September, when you know that hurricanes might be coming down the road.
Partly that sense of jeopardy, and if we are making a TV documentary out of it, no TV documentary works without there being a bit of like, what happens if? And the other thing they do with hurricanes is they name them the year before, and I think one of the names for next year's hurricanes,
2016, this year.
This year.
It's John.
Yeah, the ruddy name. So one of the... I know. I've only just got used to 2015. I've got to that age. One of them's called Lisa Next Year, or is a positive name. And you can do things like, and write songs like, Lisa, don't come to the party. Lisa, please stay away. Which has sort of like a double meaning. And it's fun.
Indeed. Now I do know that you've written a lot of your songs, if not all of them. I've got a friend here in the United States of America who's listening right now online. A lot of people do listen. So we have a lot of people right now listening to this interview, and he's asking that song that we played a little while ago, Rising Sun, mm-hmm. if you wrote that.
No, I didn't. It was, in fact, that was a traditional song, and Bob Dylan recorded it, but the most famous version was by the British band The Animals, and it's one of those iconic songs. It's one of those songs, me, like a lot of other guitarists, one of the first songs that I ever learned to play on guitar, because it's got quite a nice chord sequence. And if I learn to play a song, I tend to not, you know, I don't learn that many, so you tend to stick with the ones you know. And the reason it's in the set is because when I started doing it, people did start heckling. So there is, what, a house where, down in New Orleans, who's a Pratt, I'm one, those sort of things. So, you know, it just became an interesting part of the live show.
Mm-hmm. Good. Now, how long would it take you, though, to write a proper song?
15, and I'm coming in September, and I've started writing songs. I've got two so far. I'm trying to make sure that there's 12 by August, already in time to record the album.
Indeed. How many have you written already, though?
Two finished. I'm working on 9 in total at the moment, and I need 12. And I've got a few months to do it.
Yeah.
So
you might be writing one on the way back on British Airways tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Everybody, we're speaking to John Ardway, and of course, he's our an English musician, pop artist, pop star, and all of that. And we'll continue our discussion in just a bit. I'm going to play something by you and Wild Willie Barrett, dueling banjos and two little boys.
Yep.
Yeah? Let's do it. And banjo, I love that music anyway. You seem to be very versatile, though, John. From what I'm looking, with guitars and all of that. That's your favorite instrument?
Yes, I mean, I'm not a great musician, but I have been very lucky in the fact that I actually work with some very, very talented people. Wild Willie Barrett, who had the first hit within 1977, was an astonishing player. Banjo, violin, fiddle, guitar, any stringed instrument, he was incredibly adept at. And I think one of the reasons I've worked with such good musicians is because I do make them look good.
I want you to talk to us a little bit about a movie that you did. And in fact, the title of the movie, which I find quite interesting and put a big smile on teased at.
Not necessarily that wrong. I've always had a sort of self-effacing sort of sense of humour. I mean, other people, being the good guys, and me as the one that was always heading for disaster. And Roll's great promoting myself as Rock and Roll's greatest failure, which I found was a lot easier than trying to sell myself as Rock and Roll's greatest success.
Yes. So, how did your fans accept that movie?
The fans loved the movie largely because they were in it. Because so many of the things that I'd done over my career, they were involved with. Being at Abbey Road Studios or doing the Albert Hall or having campaigns to have hit records, and they've been following me around all the time. And the other thing we did, we basically funded the movie by selling tickets for the premiere. And what we did was, at the end of the movie, we filmed them all as they came in, but then the film actually finishes with them all arriving. So while they were watching the movie, Steve Barker, the director, was carefully editing up the last 5 minutes so that when it comes to the last 5 minutes of the show, it was them actually arriving to watch the film. And then we credited them all as producers, everybody that bought a ticket to the, so there was like 2,000, a credit of 2,000 fans at the end of the movie.
Wow. So everybody out there, you're wondering, who's Basil speaking to? I'm speaking to John Ardway. And as I did say before, John is a pump rock, folk punk musician from out of the UK. How long have you been in this business, John?
We started making a 76 a BBC programme, The Old Grey Whistle Test, where I spectacularly leapt on top of an amplifier and fell astride it. And overnight success. Had a record, Call Baby That's Really Free, out at the time, went into the charts. And not a sensible day's work since.
Yeah. Tell us, though, about some of the other, you know, world-renowned artists that you've rubbed shoulders with.
I mean, because I've been doing it for so long, and obviously you do a lot of festivals, most of the, you know, most of the contemporary musicians of my time, you know, Police, The Squeeze, you know, and a few, you know, a few people that I've recorded at Abbey Road. I've met Paul and Linda McCartney a couple of times. Yeah, I mean, saw quite a few of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, this morning we woke up to the news that David Bowie, you know, passed again, cancer, taking out people slowly but surely. No doubt you would have known of David Bowie.
Oh, of course, yes. I mean, David Bowie, for a couple of reasons. David Bowie, for our generation, was our superstar. I mean, I was only sort of like 10, 11, 12 when the Beatles and the Stones cracked, and that was the generations before me. It was their superstar, the one that they went to see live. David Bowie was our generation's superstar. There's nobody of our age that sort of achieved that sort of notoriety. And the other reason, Aylesbury in Buckinghamshire, where I come from in England, was where David Bowie launched his career in for the Ziggy Stardust thing. And he played a local club, Friars, just after the album Hunky Dory came out, when he'd only had the one small hit, and launched his career. And I remember everybody going bananas about the incredible stage show that he did to not that many people. And a year later, I mean, he was huge and playing Wembley, you know, Arena.
Must be a big loss to music.
Well, yes. I mean, as I say, he was the biggest star of our generation.
Wow. John Otway, everybody. You got a song called Josephine.
Yes.
Yeah, you wrote this one.
Yes.
And do you remember what year you wrote this?
I was quite young when I wrote this. I wrote this when I was in my late teens, early 20s.
Let's take a listen to it right here on The Breakfast Show.
Festival, for the festival is only once a year. Raise your glasses in the air and fill the barrels full of beer. Mother Nature, wave a wand over this lady's hand. May her rain mean a good year on our land. And the legend, Josephine, the blonde blue-eyed May Queen, spent the night in the arms of her lover the day before the crown. Gifts and flowers by her bed, tired eyes and sleepy head. Shine has gone in the
So cool and calming, isn't it?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, really cool and calming. I was checking out something where, in fact, I think you did an interview or something where you were talking about maybe the saddest song that you've ever written. I don't know if you remember that one.
There's quite a few sad songs.
Yes. But there's some, the saddest song ever written. That's the one.
Oh, I did do a version of Bobby Gillespie's Honey.
Right.
The reason for that was the BBC had a competition to find what the saddest song ever written was. And I bought that record when it first came out, and I voted for it, and it won. And it was actually voted, you know, the saddest song ever written. And heavens above, even sadder than the original.
I like it. Because you put your own touch in it, right?
Pardon?
You put your own... Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yes, sir.
Now tell us, you're also doing a documentary now, as we speak. You've been here for a few days and you're doing a documentary, am I correct?
Yes, well, the idea of doing a documentary is to do a documentary about bringing the band over, you know, to record the album. And this is a recce to sort of work out whether it's possible. So it's really a nice idea to document the whole project from the initial idea and, you know, really capture, you know, my first thoughts of the you know, the place and the feasibility and, you know, us going around and working out how we're going to do it.
Indeed. Now, what do you hope to answer at down this documentary? Are you going to leave us stranded, or are you going to maybe come back to Montserrat every now and again and bring some other people over?
Well, I mean, the whole point of coming over here to record an album is to have a huge, huge hit album and, you know, put both me and Montserrat back on the map. And, I'll certainly be back. I've thought quite often. I've never been somewhere that's been so welcoming. I mean, it's an absolutely lovely place. And just take it, really, completely taken me by surprise.
Do you have a name for the album already? Anything in the back of your mind?
No.
Maybe might encompass Montserrat?
No, I sort of came over here to get inspiration, and I'm getting it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you keep on speaking about how wonderful Montserrat is. I want you to put it into context and tell us exactly some of the little things that you see here that you don't see any other place.
I very much agree with a lot of the people I've spoken to that have come here for, you know, a weekend or something and ended up staying 15 years. And each time you ask those people, what is it? Yeah, the people. That's jolly good fun. I mean, it really is. And I'm not making that up. It is really, really good fun. I mean, when I left the UK, I mean, it was foggy, it was drizzly. Nobody looked particularly happy. And it was sort of like 8 or 9 in the morning, you know, on a cold morning. But came here and it's just completely the opposite. Everybody's smiling and the sun's shining. And it's great.
And John, Montserrat is a place that you would sell to the world?
Well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's one of those double-edged swords, though, isn't it? You know, if you really, really sold it and millions came, it would lose its charm. So I think you've got to sell it delicately.
You want to keep it quiet for a moment?
No, not completely. I mean, if you find something beautiful or you write something beautiful, you do want to share it with people, but not to the extent where it gets spoiled.
Yeah. What about coming to Montserrat, though? Getting here, I know, can be a hassle.
Well, I think the reason, or the thing about it being a hassle to get here, is part of the reason. It is so charming. I mean, if you want to come, you have to make the effort. And
it's like finding diamonds, right?
Yeah.
You got to dig deep on all of it.
Yeah. Mm. The thing is, you do make an effort to get somewhere. It's often a lot nicer, and you get a lot more out of it than something that's really easy, like a big jet to fly you and to big hotel, but with the beach next to it. And, you know, if you've got to sort of like hop onto a little, you know, sort of seven-seater plane and just sort of fly off and see where you're going, if you know, in front of you. You feel you're going somewhere.
But you're becoming a pilot at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
You're learning how to fly because it's right there.
Yeah.
it's like cooking magic and you're looking inside the kitchen, right?
Yeah, you don't normally go to places where you actually have a chat to the pilot or, you know, during the flight or whatever, when he turns around and points, when you're 30,000 feet, when it's also, we're crossing this. Do you know what I mean? When you've actually got the pilot next to you, tapping you on the shoulder and pointing.
The
idea a couple of two, three months ago. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Everybody I mentioned to it said, "Look, before you do anything, go there and find out for yourself, because it won't be like what you imagine it to be like." And it's not. It's better.
It's better. Wow.
Yeah.
So you're not disappointed at all.
And it's an unbelievable place. And the first, if you're so helpful and like the project that we were doing and really warm to, and I just sort of said, I just don't want to come back here and record an album. Everybody was so incredibly helpful that all the things that we'd sort of like put the whole week aside to achieve, we pretty much achieved in the first day, you know, from getting a helicopter trip around the album to sort of like seeing the, seeing all the places we wanted to see. And it was really one of the most, and it's, I mean, I know it sounds over the top, but it's actually true.
Wow. John Otto, everybody. We're speaking to him here. I've got a song here, and one of your fans who's listening said, "Basil, please play That's really Free."
Cool, baby, That's Really Free.
Yeah.
It was my first hit from 1977.
Can we take a listen?
Absolutely.
Let's go, let's do it.
You're listening to Basil Chambers Live.
Do you see? I see me true love. She walks up and she kisses me. I say, "Poor baby, that's really free." I got walking down to your house. Tell me, baby, is it good for me? Your mom and pa, they just want to kick me. I say, "Poor baby, that's really free." A really free, really free, really, 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 really free.
Wow. Wow. I saw that you were enjoying that one. And your cameraman was actually jigging to that one as well. A lot of people have been touching my Facebook page and they're bigging you up and all of that.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so you got to big them up, you know. You're here with the team, though. Tell us who else you've got with you this time around.
I'll go with me. My director, Steve Barker, who's doing, who's putting together the documentary, and my mate Richard Cotton, who has got involved with a lot of the projects I've done, and is remarkably adept at getting my wonderful dreams to come true.
Okay, so tell us, John, are you married? Do you have children?
I've got a daughter. My wife sadly died a couple of years ago.
Oh, give us condolences to you, man.
But I've got a daughter who's 26, and I'm hoping to bring her over in September.
Okay, now, so after the album is done and has been recorded here in Montserrat, what are your plans after that?
Obviously, do a big tour to promote the album. Mm-hmm. As I was saying, it hasn't been one for 15 years, so there should be something to shout about.
Okay, how long do you usually go on a tour when you do one?
Well, with me, it's been more like jobbing, gigging. Really, I mean, I've made my living out of doing live work, so really, it's been, you know, 120 shows a year, you know, basically since 1977. Mm-hmm. I do really, really enjoy doing live work. I really do.
And is this around the UK or?
Yes, pretty much around the UK. I don't really get out of the country very often. So this is a first one. I've never been to the Caribbean before.
Never?
No.
Wow. And then you come straight to Montserrat.
Yeah. And everybody sort of said, a load of people have said it, actually, you're lucky you came here first. And I think I am, probably.
So have you had the goat water?
Pardon?
Have you had the goat water?
No, that's tomorrow, I think.
You're going to have that before you leave. Because the goat water is actually our national dish.
Oh, the goat water. I thought you meant drink.
Oh,
the
runaway gut.
Runaway gut.
Yeah, you've got to check runaway gut.
Yeah, runaway gut, I've got to do that tomorrow. No, the day before yesterday I had the goat water. Wonderful soup. Mm-hmm. It's great. What a good national dish.
Indeed. Have you seen the animal itself, though?
I've seen several goats, yes.
Okay, okay.
It's quite interesting, the goats.
Maybe you had one of those goats that you saw.
What's interesting about the goats, though, is that obviously somebody owns them, but they just sort of seem to run wild and free around the whole island.
Mm. Wow, I like it. All right, so make sure that tomorrow, or even later today before you guys leave, make sure that you go to Runaway Gut.
Yeah.
Wash your face and taste a little bit of the water.
I'm going
to
do that.
And say that you must come back to Montserrat.
The only problem in doing that, I gather there's quite a few people who have done that on the island, and they are the people that have come over for a weekend and stayed 15 years and been unable to leave.
Yes.
So it's a bit dangerous doing it, but I'm going to do it anyway because I'm brave.
Yeah, and you'll be back in September for sure.
Definitely back in September.
Indeed.
I saw the light on the night that I stood by her with. I saw the flickering shadows of love on her blind. Went out of my mind. My Delilah. Why Delilah.
John Otway, something called Delilah. John, I want to thank you for dropping in. You know, it's been a pleasure meeting you and getting to know you as we go along. We expect to see you and your entourage back again in September when it should be better, greater for all of us.
Yeah, and I'm really, really, really looking forward to it. And my band are going to love it.
How big is your band, by the way?
It's four pieces. Five piece with me. I'm not regarded as a member of the band.
they're right.
They sort of in a very undeferential way called me the star, and they're the band. Mm. Two guitars, bass, and drums.
And that's all.
Yeah.
Wow. I like it. I like it.
That's what I'm hoping. One of our jobs today is to wander around the island looking at suitable venues to put on a show, and that's the plan. Is to sort of like at the end of the week's recording, put on a show, play a few of the songs we've recorded, and
it's a good time.
Yeah,
John, thank you again for dropping in. I want to wish you and your team all the very best. Safe flight back, and of course we'll stay connected because we have a lot of work to do in September. But final word belongs to you.
I just thought I'd say thanks for everybody that's helped me while I've been over here, and I really, really have appreciated it, and it does mean I am really, really looking forward to September.
Indeed. Everybody, John Otway. Thank you again, John.
Thanks.
Indeed.
The old hometown, it looks the same as I step down on the train, and there to greet me is my mama and my papa. Yes, they've all come to see me by the shade of that old oak tree, and it was a good to touch the green, green grass of home. I walk with a my sweet Mary. Oh, her hair of gold and her lips like cherries. Green, green grass of home. Then I awake and I look around me at these four grey walls that surround me, and I realise, oh yeah, I was only dreaming. There's a god, and there's this saddle padre. Yeah, on and on, we're gonna walk at daybreak, and again, I'll touch the green, green grass of home. Yes, they've all come to see me down by the reaching, smiling sweetly. Yeah, as they lay me beneath the green, green grass.
So good, in time for me for today. Gotta go, gotta run. I want to thank everybody for dropping in and dropping by. Until we meet again tomorrow morning at around 6 o'clock right here on ZJB Radio. My name is Basil. God bless all of you. Have a fantastic and a great Monday.